Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Larimer, today joined by Mr. Herman Pretorius. And we've got quite a few interesting stories to get into today. This is, of course, I think, the year of local government elections. So we are spending a lot of time here talking about local government elections, about the politics, about the policy, about everything that's going on behind the scenes and under the hood and in the open. But let's start off by talking a little bit about national government policy. Now, ever since the ANC has proposed the National Health Insurance Scheme, which essentially would proposes to eventually abolish private medical aid, have all the money paid to private medical aid paid into a sort of central government-controlled medical aid, is essentially the plan. There has been significant opposition from within the industry. Now, that opposition for a long time was much more muted than it should be. It much more was behind the scenes because I think a lot of big insurance companies and things thought that maybe they weren't actually going to face the full brunt of this, or it would be watered down, or they would be cut in on a deal and somehow. Anyway, when that became apparent and government passed this thing into law, that they were not going to be cut in, the court challenges started in a big way. And we've now seen an interesting statement from Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana on NHI. Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana has said that he wants an end to all the court hostilities of the National Health Insurance, and he believes that parties all just sit down, they could reach settlement. He's quoted he was speaking in Parliament during the appropriations bill debate, where he said, "Despite a series of court cases, I believe we can find a solution. These cases will delay the implementation of NHI. The interesting thing is that both the protagonists in court proclaim their support for universal coverage and access. It is my submission that these parties must meet and craft a settlement. We want to move ahead with NHI." So, Treasury has been pretty opposed to NHI just because they say it's unaffordable. The Health Minister, Aaron Motsoaledi, and his chief functionary, Dr. Nicholas Crisp, have, however, refused to sort of budge. This has led to an awkward stalemate where the NHI is essentially the law, but is not given enough money by Treasury to be implemented. It's kind of frozen in place, creating the sort of uncertainty, and every now and again, the health minister tries to push some sort of implementation of it. And there's the big fight over that. I wonder, Herman, does this call by the finance minister signal, however, that the proponents of NHI are worried of losing in court? Is that, and maybe he's trying to help his comrade, the animals, the lady, save some face by, reworking this? I guess it would have to go through Parliament again, which seems like a big ask, considering the ANC doesn't have a majority anymore, and it would have to be negotiated with other parties. What's your take on all this?
So I think this is the finance minister being tactical and sort of inching perhaps the conversation towards what Treasury clearly feels it needs, and that is an off-ramp to redesign the system. Because, as you say, National Treasury has been very, very slow, some might even say obstructive, in its role where NHI is concerned, and quite rightly so. It is an unaffordable bureaucratic mess that will at first price private healthcare providers out of the market before over time essentially removing them wholesale from the ability to participate in the market. And the tragic thing is that we're already seeing the effects of this awful policy. I was speaking to some medical practitioners late last year, and there are certain medical professionals that are highly skilled that you find sort of one or eight or seven specialists left in the entire country. There are specialists that you have 18, 19-month waiting periods simply to get an appointment in the private sector because many of these people have decided to leave South Africa under the threat of this scheme. And Solidarite has published data over the last few years, survey numbers from, I think, their members, showing that vast quantities of medical practitioners, nurses, doctors, all the way across the industry are considering emigration to move away from what is quite clearly a horrible project that will combine the worst of an SOE in the ESCOM sense of managing resources and managing an entity at scale, the worst of state capture, where the hundreds of billions of rands it will cost per year will be under government management, the worst of the public health sector as it currently struggles to provide even basic healthcare, and also the worst of market policy and intervention in terms of stuff like price control, which taken together, it's just a truly awful policy. And the point of its affordability has long been its the weakest point. And if you've asked, and whenever Nicholas Crisp or Joe Partla or Aaron Matsualedi have been asked, you know, how is this thing going to be affordable? They have come back with nonsense like we're going to afford it because it needs to be afforded. And and then you just realize that this isn't an answer. And I wish I was exaggerating. I wish I was exaggerating. That's literally the type of answer they provide. So the fact that Godongwana is now saying that he's open to a compromise, or that he urges compromise and sort of a revisit of the design of the system, and he bases it on universal healthcare and access, is to my mind quite telling. Because from the IRR side, our policy recommendations have been in the direction of healthcare vouchers, where you have a means-tested healthcare voucher, where in inverse proportion to your poverty, you get state support to be able to purchase medical treatment and medical attention and medicine within the market. And that is sort of, I would say, a strong move in the direction of universal access, and a move that quite likely wouldn't be as expensive as the, you know, between 200 billion and 700 billion rand per year. And that sort of, that's the estimates of where the NHI's annual costs will be. So I think what we're seeing in this is Treasury sensitive to the fact that it can't be permanently seen as obstructive, especially not Godongwana in terms of ANC policy, but also picking the one little gap through which a compromise might be negotiated. Now, if we end up in a situation that is called the NHI, but looks nothing like the current NHI, where you do incorporate you know, something like a voucher system, and where you take the fiscal ability of the state and in some way connect it in a safe and prudent way to the need of especially the poorest people to be able to afford healthcare. That's essentially what a voucher system is. So the fact that that Godongwana zeroed in on that point of possible coherence on the two sides, to my mind, seems to be a very, very early tactical sort of shift of the dial, realizing that Treasury can't always just say no. It has to engage, at least for the internal consistency and peace, whatever it may be, of the ANC, that there needs to be some movement on this issue from Treasury. So I think this is rather brave of Godongwana. I don't think Godongwana is saying that the NHI as is needs to be implemented. We're working at Treasury has a tendency to make pragmatists of even the sort of radical ideologues and communists. So it's space worth watching for, and it's a gap where the IRR will definitely seek to make our mark in terms of especially the Better Health Bill, which is a draft law that we've written that promotes exactly this sort of universal access through market mechanism with state support in a reasonable, fair deal that with a taxpayer and the poorest South Africans in need of help.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of irritating to me how this universal access thing is used and abused, because very often its proponents mean it's just use it as a euphemism to say that means no private healthcare or centralized control or something like that. When, you know, I mean, South Africa's healthcare system, it's not quite universal, its public healthcare system, but it's pretty close to. If you're very poor in South Africa, you can get medical treatment. Now, the quality of that medical treatment, waiting lists, all those sort of things, is of course a very different question, because the healthcare system has been so badly run. But it's sort of it's kind of been a continuous point of annoyance for me that if you actually took that statement seriously about genuine access, you'd support something far more like the Better Health Bill, to actually see people get healthcare access rather than, you know, just trying to create a giant pot of money that politicians will have control of. Because as we know from recent history, there's no way in South Africa that could go wrong at all.
And yeah, absolutely no way. It'll be fine. But I think what the ANC should realize is that the NHI, the more people see of the NHI, the less popular it is. We've got polling on the fact that South Africans who are forced by circumstances to make use of public healthcare would. And in a vast majority of them would prefer a private healthcare alternative. And if you look at the tracking poll into the 2024 elections, the ANC was stable in the mid-40s, 45, 46%, right up until the 13th, 15th of May, that moment when Ramaphosa signed the NHI into law. And the party lost 5% in the last 2 weeks, or 5 percentage points in the last 2 weeks of the campaign. So, if the idea is that the NHI will be this massive political success, there's literally no evidence from recent data showing that this is what South Africans want. South Africans are a moderate bunch. That memeable NHI ad where the white couple says to each other, "Oh, it sounds a bit communist." So fundamentally misread the situation. It's not that South Africans are opposed to it in whole because it's communist. I mean, many people are, but it is because the South Africans, supposedly whom the NHI is for, have all seen the public clinics and hospitals. And yes, it is a bit communist in the sense that many people die at the hands of the state. But what they want isn't necessarily, oh, we want something that's free market. No, most people aren't ideologues. They just want the ability or the peace of mind to know that if they get sick, or their loved ones get sick, there's help available. And with the government's track record, the NHI in the public opinion quite clearly is not that.
Yeah, it's been quite funny. Just before we move on, one last thought on this. It was quite funny seeing Panyaza Lesufi before the last local government elections campaigning using NHI as a reason to vote for the ANC. And he would say, he essentially said something like, "Oh, well, you'll just be able to go to any private hospital whenever you want if we or once we have NHI." Now, that's not entirely true. I think you're supposed to go to like a specific hospital and where you live and that sort of thing. But be that regardless, it's kind of it's an admission of failure. It's saying, hey, vote for us because this new policy will mean that you can escape the hospitals that we provide
Yes.
for you already.
Yes. Exactly. No, that's a very, very good observation. There are so many admissions of failure, in these rhetorical flourishes, and that's certainly one of them. Is that you can get out of these hell holes that we force you into.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to our next story. And this is indeed about local government. This is a piece by Adrian Bosson, the editor-in-chief of the country's biggest news organization, News24. And it's kind of interesting. In this opinion piece, basically, he endorses the DA, which is, you know, if you followed that kind of crowd, and particularly people like Bosson, that is a little bit of a new development, actually. Now, he doesn't say the words, I endorse the DA for the local government elections, etc. But it's called the ANC's Neisner Problem, this opinion piece he's written. I'll just quote some bits from it. When the residents of Neisner, black and white, rich and poor, go to the ballot box in November, they will think of only one thing, water. Just a side note, I don't know if it's been confirmed that the election is actually going to be in November. That's just speculation at this point, I think.
Yeah, November at the earliest. It's between yes. November this year and the end of January next year, essentially. That's the window.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think November is likely, though, but we'll see. Anyway, he goes on to say, quote, once voted best town in South Africa, the jewel of the Garden Route is teetering on the brink of implosion. In less than 10 days, Neisner will have no water. Neisner has become the latest symbol of ANC misrule. Water shortages in South Africa is South Africa's new load shedding. And Neisner is the perfect case study of how not to run a town. He goes on to talk about how the coalition that was initially set up was between the DA and the PA and a local group, but that later the DA's coalition partners abandoned it, going over to the ANC, in the case of the PA, joining with the EFF. To form a government there. Mm-hmm. And since then, things have gone downhill. Infamously, I remember this, talked about this news story last year, a decomposing body was found in the water reservoir in Neisner. But there have been lots of other things, sewage system problems, water shedding, rubbish piling up all over the place. The Western Cape provincial government wanted to place Neisner under administration by the provincial government to try and rescue it, but this was blocked by the ANC at various levels and opposed by the ANC mayor of the municipality. And things have gotten really bad to the point that, you know, now they're pretty much out of water. Basson concludes by saying, quote, Neisner's neighbor, George, is experiencing a dry season, but the water shortage is nowhere near as severe as Neisner's. Ramaphosa would point out that George is under the DA's control. Now, he's referring to Ramaphosa's admonishment of ANC councillors last year, where he basically said, you know, we need to actually learn some lessons from the DA because they run municipalities better than us, which is, shall we say, not a great way to launch your election campaign, especially when it's followed up by, I guess, your deputy, Gwede Mantashe, saying that ANC councillors had no capacity, or capacity dololo, as he said. Yes. Which is also not a great election message. Basson goes on, the breakdown of services in municipalities such as Neisner, Johannesburg, and Ditsobolo will be the top of mind for many voters when they go to the polls later this year. The DAR already started putting up billboards quoting Ramaphosa on how the party is better at running municipalities than the ANC. Examples like Neisler will make it impossible to argue with the president's sentiment. Two things. One, Herman, is I think, you know, this is just feeds into the story that's probably going to be the story of this local government election, which is that the ANC really is out of gas in so many ways at making any kind of credible governance argument in almost every municipality in which it governs. But also the shift in national sentiment. I mean, such a pro-DA column from someone like Basson, you didn't used to see that too much.
And that's the first thing that actually stood out for me is I actually had to scroll after reading this thing. I had to scroll just to make sure that, you know, down Basson is editor in chief of News 24. Yeah, writes Adrian Basson. This is actually written by Adrian Basson. I had to make
it's sure. Not someone sharing his name.
Yes, no, it's not sort of like Schmadrian Schmashmon, but because fundamentally no one can accuse Basson of being pro-DA, and he must have, I think that if we're going to take a charitable interpretation, it's that the facts pressure became so significant that when push came to shove, even someone as critical as Adrian Basson of the DA had to admit that there's a fundamental difference between these two parties. And this is one of the most annoying little lazy, cynical truisms of South African politics is that, they're all the same. They're all the same, you know, and the other, and that's gotten worse since the GNU came about, because they're like, DA, ANC, they're all in the same boat. Well, the problem then is you're left with, if all the GNU parties are just ANC light or DA light or whatever the case may be, the parties you're left with are Action SA with a horrendous track record where they govern in terms of Tshwane, and quite an awful track record in terms of government stability. The ACDP, which I mean is probably the most expensive irrelevance in South African politics. And then you've got the National Coloured Congress, you've got MK, you've got the EFF. And I think sort of that's it. If the GNU, if we're gonna lean into the lazy cynical narrative that they're all the same, we have to ignore the difference between the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape. We have to ignore the difference between George and Knysna, and we have to ignore a difference so obvious that people like Cyril Ramaphosa and even Adrian Basson now seem to acknowledge. That shift, that Overton window shift, is remarkable. And the DA is in a very strong position if it plays its cards right. And the local government elections, in a way, is the perfect post-GNU elections for the DA, because the DA has always been the party of local government delivery. The DA gets things done brand, despite the last 10 years of the DA not always getting things done. The entire brand was essentially built on a 3-year period between 2006 and 2009, when Helen Ziller was made the DA mayor of Cape Town. That's where sort of the DA difference, the DA gets things done, the DA does clean government, that's where it comes from, essentially. It's its national brand identity. And what local government also does, which a national or provincial election doesn't do, is it allows a very more, much more narrow and cerebral and non-emotive range of issues to dominate the discussion. Because in a national campaign, you can do BEE, racism, race grievance, Urania, Volkstaat. You can dust off all those identitarian arguments that might mobilize an EFF or a Freedom Front Plus or an MK or an ANC. But when it comes to local government, it's really about the boring stuff, but the everyday stuff. It's potholes, pavements, sewage, taps, waste removal, traffic lights. It is the mundanities of governance where a party, perhaps not known for its passion and more for it's not the guy you flirt with, it's the guy you bring home to your parents kind of vibe. It's that sort of electoral campaign context where the DA really can put forward the contrast between a place like George and Knysna. And a perfect little election poster for the DA would just be where the Eastern Cape meets the Western Cape, and where Midvaal meets, Vereeniging or whatever the case may
I
be,
think
where.
they did that in 2016. I can't
Yes,
remember what year.
and again in 2021, I think. So all the things are lining up for the Overton window to shift to the boring pragmatism of local government competence. And if you ask South Africa which party has shown the most competence at a local government level, then, and the DA manages to frame the election around that question, then they're in for a sweet deal. Ironically, that's why we will see probably the ANC stoke more sort of divisions. They'll dust off the nationalization of the Reserve Bank as they've started, expropriation without compensation. They'll dust off their greatest hits to stir up controversy. And this has been their tactic ever since, because they know they can win an election if it is a grievance election. But if it is a competence election, the ANC's got a 20-year track record, and I exclude the first decade deliberately. The ANC's got a 20-year track record of unadulterated failure and increasing failure. So the framing of this election, will it be water or no water, George or Knysna, or will it be grievance, the haves versus the have-nots, because that'll define who will do best.
So it's quite interesting looking at the electoral history in Knysna. This is a municipality where the DA has actually been very strong for a long time. In the first local government elections in 2000, they got sort of 43% of the vote there. Then, you know, they sort of went down a bit in 2006. But by 2016, you know, the DA was winning 51% of the PR ballots in that ward. 2021 was, however, a really bad year for the DA's results there. And they had, you know, there were local revolts. And I think, you know, it's arguable what those revolts were from, mistakes made by the party, new challenges in the form of the PA. There's a number of local parties like the Knysna Independent Movement and some other local parties who challenged the DA in the municipality. And even though the ANC's vote totals stayed quite similar at around 30%, the DA's dropped down to 36 or whatever it was in the last local government elections. But interestingly, we come to the 2024 national election. Now, of course, people are not voting on the municipality in that, but you still get an idea of how people will vote in the next local government election based on the last national one. And here we see the DA almost back up to a majority, despite the fact that the PA has grown. It grew between 2021 and 2024. So it does seem like this has been an interesting experience where the party lost control. It was strong, lost control, and it seems to be winning supporters back. If you, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the fascinating thing in especially Johannesburg and Tshwane has been that the swings in terms of the metro polling on the ground and the national picture have been quite in relation to each other. There seems to be, at least in these two big metros, I haven't checked for any of the others, and it's not a hard and fast extrapolation to do. But if you calculate the level of support that the DA got in 2021, and you connect and you sort of link it to its national support, and then you take the latest polling of the IRR putting them on 30%, or the SRF putting them on 32%, and you sort of reverse engineer the local result from the national picture, you get something quite close to the polling that the DA is currently doing on the ground, which puts the DA at 45, 46, 47% in Tshwane and at 36, 37, 38% in Johannesburg. And I don't, that's the frustrating thing is I don't know if that holds true for everywhere. It would be a fascinating thing if the swings at local government level and the swings at national level polling have this very strict relationship in South Africa, because then you would be able to make a very, very nice extrapolation from, right, if the DA got 35% of the vote in a national election when they got 22 or 23 or 24% of the vote, and the DA is now on 30% of the vote or 32, what does that mean? And if the rule from Tshwane and Johannesburg hold, then you can calculate that the DA is pretty much in the high 40s, nudging majority territory as in 2024. So, I mean, it's genuinely all to play for. And the fact that the election is going to be one much more of an Excel spreadsheet election, you know, service delivery and the boring stuff, the waste getting removed on time, nothing about the grand rhetoric of ideology, but South Africans settling for something that resembles mere competence. It's the Knysna might be one of those very telling and rather shocking turnaround stories. I expect Tshwane to be a similar turnaround story, going from a really struggling government and a horrible fiscal situation to a stable DA solo or DA Freedom Front Plus government. And if they can manage the same in Knysna and they can have a handful of these municipalities, then it's no longer in the next cycle when we're in, you know, 2031. It's no longer the DA and the Cape Town story. It's the Dia and the Mirdwal story and the Cape Town story and the Knysna story and the Pretoria story. So it's a very promising period for the Dia if they can manage it.
Right. You know, the risk is, of course, that they have the same problem, which is that if they don't deliver, they're going to face these revolts. I mean, Action SA, in some ways, I think their 2021 vote was in part a revolt against mistakes the DA had made in Joburg, which is, you know, one of the reasons why Action SA was most firmly established there. And, you know, Knysna, they lost control of because these other independent parties challenged them. Now, you know, the DA can credibly make the argument, well, you didn't vote for us, and now look, the ANC got back in control of the municipality, which is fair enough. But that's, you know, that argument only goes so far. You do also need to prevent fix the things that caused people to desert in the first place.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't have enough time for the last story. I think we're going to talk about the drama at the national level in the DA tomorrow when I have Dr. John Endres on. But anyway, our last story for today, I was just going to mention, was I'll very briefly mention it here. Buffalo City, which is the municipality around East London, has had its vehicles seized after it failed to pay a 2.2 million rand boxing sponsorship deal. And my read on the story is that the mayor of Buffalo City made a deal to sponsor some ANC cadres' project to to have this boxing tournament, then realized the money wasn't available or that that wasn't a great idea, tried to not pay it, at which point the the people who organized the promotions event, who organized the boxing tournament, said, well, you did agree to pay us, and managed to get a court order against the city. Herman, my take on this is that you know, this is an example of how money running out, misgovernance, political pressure are a direct threat to the patronage network.
And I think there's a second threat, and I'll keep this short. There's a second threat that I've been banging on about for the ANC, and that is that they don't have the bench anymore. They don't have the depth of talent and skill. The other day, I took the time to go through the parliamentarians elected for the ANC in 1994. And you get sort of impressive names, names that are worth taking seriously. You don't get names like Princess Faku. And even as late as 2007, the Polokwane conference, you get, you know, a name like Joel Netsetenze was up for Secretary General. Now, I don't have a particularly high view of Netsetenze, but you have to admit that he's a guy of some substance and some thought. And the ANC has run out of that. Part of that is cadre deployment, is that in a healthy democracy, people rise across your society in academia or the NGO sphere or the clergy or whatever the case may be, in business, and you recruit them into politics. And by through doing that, you sort of have this timber of flowing into politics, society feeding into the skill of politics. But cadre deployment reversed that process, where it took the talent that they might have been in the ANC in the first place and dispersed it across society, so that at the end of the day, you now sit in a situation where you have Princess Fakus rather than Tokyo Sekwales. And it's starting to show. The party doesn't have the bench, it doesn't have the talent, it doesn't have the skill, neither in governance nor politics. And that's why I think the party is falling apart, and why I don't see a road to recovery for the party. The intellectual nous needed to perform a U-turn and to save this sinking ship isn't there, not in a governmental setup nor a political context.
Well, I'm looking forward to the next batch of polling, which comes out as we get closer to that local government election. I'm sure you and I, Herman, are going to have a lot to say about that. It's going to be very interesting to see whether all of our feelings about where this is going so far are vindicated. I'm pretty confident they will be. Okay, with that, let us call this all to a close. We shall see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. I hope you have a most excellent and wonderful day. Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.